Okay, we're starting here on the bottom of Ted Amud Bet, two lines from the bottom. Rish Lakish had just had a discussion either with Rabba Bar Chana, the Gemara changed that to possibly with Ze'iri. Rish Lakish makes the point that had the people come up at the time of Bayit Sheni, everybody come back to Eretz Yisrael at that point in time, then the Shekhinah would have been Shora in the Bayit Sheni, and it would have been permanent. It would never have been destroyed. But because they only came up partially, only a part of the population came, therefore the Mikdash doesn't have the Ashrat HaShchina. And in addition to that, it has the possibility of being destroyed, which is what's going to happen. It gets destroyed. Ke'ata the kamei to Rabbi Yochanan. So when Reish Lakish then comes to Rabbi Yochanan and tells him over what he had said, Amalei, love I no taima. He says, I don't agree. That's not right. De'inami saliku kulu bimei Ezra. Even had everyone come up from Bevel in the time of Ezra, lo v'shar yeshchina b'migdasheni. The Shechina would not have been shore migdasheni. Tichtiv, because of the pasuk. Yaft elukim the yafet, vishkon bolei shem. Afagav the yaft elukim the yafet, even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives beauty to yafet, in a Shechina shora, but the Shechina is only a Shora in Olei Shem. The implications of the Gemara are that by Bayit Rishon that was built by Shlomo HaMelech, which was built by a descendant of Shem, there the Shechina was Shora in the Mikdash. On the other hand, the Bayit Sheni, which is sponsored by Persia, a descendant of Yefet, which we'll get to in 1 second in the Gemara, over there the Shechina would not be Shora, based on the Pasuk in Noach, which is you have to look in the Yefet, the beauty, will belong to Yefet, but Vishkon v'Olei Shem. The Shekhinah will only be Shora in the Olei Shem, in the buildings of Shem. It is interesting, just as an aside, because we know from the Gemara in Pesachim that Persia sponsored the second Beit HaMikdash. They gave permission, Koresh gives them permission, he gives them money, he gives them the means to do it. But then we have, when they get there, we say, Lo lanu v'lachem livnotet Beit Hashem. It came to the Kutim and others, it was built solely by Jews. So it was only built by Jews, even though the sponsorship was Persian. Here, the Gemara views it as being built by Persia by the fact that they granted permission. It was under their dominion, and they sponsored a lot of what went on there. Upersai minolon demi Yefet ka'atu. How do you know that the Persians are descendants of Yefet? Tichtiv, because it says in the Pasuk in Noach, B'nei Yefet, Gomer, Umagog, Umadai, V'Avan, V'Tuval, U'Meshech, V'Tiras. So now the Gemara is going to explain each of these. Gomer, Zeg, Germania. The Gemara changes it to Germania, which is based on the Gemara in Megillah, which also has a similar description, Germania. So Germania, which the Gemara seems to identify with the same Germania that's found in the Gemara in Megillah. Some of the others describe Germania as the land of Simirai, or others identified as Kerman in South Persia. Magog zu Kandia. Kandia is usually identified with Crete. Others identify it with Gothia, the land of the Goths. Madai zu Macedonia. Yavan kemashmao. The Bach says over here with regards to that Madai zu Macedonia Yavan kemashmao. He switches the gears to read that it's Yavan zu Macedonia, which would make sense that Yavan, Greece, is Macedonia. Alexander the Great is known in the Gemara as Alexandron Moknon. Alexander from Macedonia. And then it would be Madai Kimashmo. Media is like it says. Madai, it means media, like the Persian Median Empire, and it's the literal meaning. And he says Zeikar. That's the proper way to read this. Tuval, Zebeit Onyaiti, is identified with Bithynia, a place in Asia Minor. Meshach Zumusia, it's also a district that is found in Asia Minor. Tiras, Pligi ba Rabbi Simai v'Rabbanon. It's a machlok between Rabbi Simai and the Rabbanon. Vamila, Rabbi Simon v'Rabbanon. Chadamar Zubay Triki is identified with Thrace. Chadamar Zupras, that this refers to Pras. Now it's interesting here because it's not everybody who agrees here that we have Pras. We have Pras according to one opinion that is the definition of Tiras, is that it was Persia. If you have Pras being Persia, then we're talking about here the Bnei Yefet. These are the descendants of Yefet. And they would be the progenitor of the Persia that was in the time of Koresh that granted permission for them to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. Tani Rav Yosef, Tirasu Pras. He says Tiras is definitely Pras. So this is found in Pasuk Zion later on in the list of descendants here. There we dealt with the descendants of Beit Yefet. Here the Gemara moves on and discusses the descendants of Canaan. It is Bnei Canaan Cush, and then Cush has all of these individuals, and then they talk about Nimrod there in the Psukim, and it says Savta Virama Visavtucha. Tani Rav Yosef, Sikistan Giviata, Visikistan Brayata. That's the inner Sikistan and the outer Sikistan. That's why you have in the Pasuk Savta and Savtucha, which both sound similar. They're referring to these two areas, the area of Sakistan Giviyata, the inner Sakistan, and Sakistan Brayata, which is the outer Sakistan, which is identified as Drangania, a district that is in Persia, others translate it as Scythia. There's 100 parsot between each one of them. For Parsi, and its circumference is 1,000 parsot. They were two concentric circles, one inside of the other, and they were 100 parsot away from each other, the inner and outer circles. And the outer circle is 1,000 parsot, and circumference is 1,000 parsot. Parsa is equal to 4 mil. And the mil is equivalent to 2,000 amot. So a parsa is 8,000 amot. And then they talk about Nimrod there in the Psukim, and it says, Vatihi reshit mamlachto Bavel, ve'erech vakad v'chalnei, Bavel kimashma'a, is like it sounds like, erech zer orihut, which is worka, southeast of Bavel, ve'akad ze baskar, which is referring to Kashkar or Kaskara in Bavel. Kane ze Nofer Ninpi. Identified with the modern Nifer, because Ninpi was probably another name for this Nippur, which is also probably derived from the planet god Ninib. And so that's where the name comes from. So these are locations where they're identifying, again, places that are in the Persian and the Babylonian area. So in the subsequent pasuk it says, from this land left Ashur. So because of the juxtaposition between Nimrod in the previous pasuk in pasuk Yud, and the leaving Ashur in pasuk Yud Aleph, the Gemara associates Nimrod with the leaving of Ashur. Nimrod, according to Chazal, is the leader of Migdal Bavel. Migdal Bavel, which is found in the area, which is his kingdom. So if Ashur left there, there must be a reason why Ashur left there. And the reason, according to Rashi, as he brings down from the Midrash, that he leaves there is because he does not identify with what Nimrod is doing in Migdal Bavel, and therefore he wants to separate himself from that which is taking place over there. So therefore he leaves the area, and he establishes Assyria. So Tani Rav Yosef, Ashur ze Silok or Seleucia, which is on the border between Bavel and Ashur, Vayvinet Ninveh, vet Rechovot Ir, vet Kalach. So he builds these cities, Ninveh, Rechovot, and Kalach. Ninveh kemashma'o, Ninveh is the city of Ninveh. Rechovot Ir, Zuprat de Meshan, district near the Prat, near the Euphrates, which according to some refers to a district in the area which is connected maybe to Meshan or Messin, which is an island that is formed where the Euphrates and the Tigris come together. Kalach Zuprat de Borsif is another district right near the Euphrates, a city near Bavel, maybe known as Borsipa. Then the subsequent pasuk says, Ve et Resen ben Ninveh uben Kalach hi ha'ir agdola. So here you have Resen that sits between Ninveh and Kalach. Hi ha'ir agdola, that is the big city. You have a dangling modifier here because it's not clear which is the big city. You have three cities mentioned in the pasuk, which is Resen, which is Ben Ninveh Ben Kalach, Hi Ha'ir Agedola. Resen Ze Aktisfun, which is a town that is found on the eastern bank of the Tigris River. Hi Ha'ir Agedola. Eni Odeya, Im Ninveh Ha'ir Agedola, Im Resen Ha'ir Agedola. I don't know which one is the big city. Is it at Resen, which is the big city, and that's what Ha'ir Agedola references, which would probably be the simplest reading of the pasuk. At Resen, comma, Ben Ninveh Ben Kalach, comma, hi ha'ir agdola, so that would be the explanation of Resen. Or, is it Resen, ben Ninveh ben Kalach, hi ha'ir agdola is referencing Ninveh or Kalach. Tosafot says, the Gemara is not misupak about Kalach, because the pasuk ends with Kalach, which is, if you really wanted to be modifying Kalach, you would have said, Resen, ben Ninveh ben Kalach, ha'ir agdola. The fact that it says, hi ha'ir agdola already makes it that it's referencing back to one of the two other names in the pasuk. So Gemara is uncertain as to whether it's Resen or Ninveh, which is the Ha'ir Agdola. Shuomer, from the Navi in Yonah, which says, V'Ninveh haita Ha'ir Agdola lelukim malech shloshet yamim. So over there, the Navi describes Ninveh as being an Ha'ir Agdola. Havi omer Ninveh hi Ha'ir Agdola. That means that Nineveh was the big city, because later on in Navi, many, many years later, we find that Nineveh is referenced as the Ir HaGedolah. B'sham Achiman Sheshai V'Talmai Yilidei Anak. This is referencing the visit of the Meraglim to Eretz Yisrael when they go to the area of Hebron Kiryat Arba. Over there it says they find Achiman Sheshai V'Talmai Yilidei Anak, the children of the giants. Tana, Achiman Miuman Shebeachim. Achiman is the most dexterous of the brothers. Sheshai, Shemesim et Aretz Kishchitot. When he walks, he makes the land like pits, because he's so big, his footprints leave big pits behind him. Talmai, Shemesim et Aretz Telamim Telamim. He leaves behind furrows, meaning that when he walks, like the plow furrows, he leaves behind because he's so big. Devar Acher. Achiman, Bana Anat, Sheshai, Bana Alush, Talmai, Bana Talbush. So they built these cities that are along the northern Euphrates. Yilidei Anak, Shimon Akim Hachama Bimkomatan. So the simple way to translate would be that they block the sun with their height. Although Rashi plays on the word Manikim, Manikim, like in the Mishnah Navot, Va'anakim the Gargorotecha, means like a necklace around your neck. So how does he explain that? So Rashi says, Domeh Shetzavaro Nokei Vole Becholon Arakia. As if his neck is penetrating through the Rakia, and the rakia is a necklace around his neck. That's how tall they were, how big they were. Here we had a series of agadot dealing with the names. First of all, because of Yefet, we discussed the issue of Yefet being paras, or the descendants of Yefet being paras. Then we went on to darshan some of the other psukim there, many of them darshan by Tane Rav Yosef. Then we have a brayta or a memra that's brought from Rav Yosef that explains these items. That's most of the common denominator between a lot of these. And then it flowed into what we just discussed here. Now, the Gemara is going to go back and discuss this a little bit more about Amar Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, Amar Rabbi, Atida Romi, Shitipol Biad Paras. Eventually, Rome will fall to Paras. So historically, we know that Paras falls to Madai, the Persians fall to the Medians, and then they have the greater Persia-Median Empire, Persh being the king of Paras, that takes over from Belshazzar for Bavel. And then they are taken over by Madai when his son-in-law Daryavish from Madai takes power, but really merged into a larger empire of Persia-Median Empire. The Greeks, under Alexander the Great, eventually come and take over that area. And then the Romans take over from the Greeks. So that's historically what happens. And now there's a prediction here that Persia will reemerge and take back from Rome what was taken from them. So that's the prediction that's meaning Atida Romi Shitipol Biad Paras. Eventually the Romans will fall to Paras, to Persia. Neymar, how does he know this is going to happen? Because it says, Lachain, Shimu Atzat Hashem Asher Ya'atz El. To read El Edom. The meaning of El here means Al Edom. Come here, what Hashem has in store for Edom. Umachshon Tov Asher Chishev. Again, El Yoshvei Teiman. That which he has coming for the people of Teiman. Imlo Yischavum Tzirei Hatzon. If they will not be dragged away by Tzirei Hatzon, by the young flocks or the young sheep. Imlo yashim alehem nivehem. And if they will not be appalled by their folds. So Tzirei Hatzon and the nivehem will come and override and wash them away or drag them away. Matkifla rabba barula, my mashma, the high Tzirei Hatzon, prasu. How do you know that the Tzirei Hatzon here that are come and drag away or wash away Edom and Yoshvei Teiman, how do you know that refers to Pras? Dichtiv, because it says in the vision of Daniel that he sees over the water, he sees there, Ha'ayo Asher Ra'ita, he sees the animals, and then Hashem describes, what are these animals? Ha'ayo Asher Ra'ita Bal HaKranayim, that ram that you saw that had horns, Machay Madayu Paras, the kings of Madayu Paras. So we see Ayo, Ayo being a ram, is a large sheep, references to Paras in the Nevuat Daniel. Therefore, also over here, the Tzirei Atzon, which are the young sheep, they also reference to Paras. So that's how we know that Paras will come and override Edom, where it says, Ve'ima Yavan. In that same Nevuah of Daniel, it says, Dichtiv, Ve'at Safir HaSa'ir Melech Yavan. In that vision, the Sa'ir, the goat, references to Melech Yavan, to the king of Greece. Tzon is a term for flock animals. It can refer to sheep or it can refer to goats. So how do you know which one it is? How do you know for sure it's the sheep and it's Paras? Maybe it's the goats and it refers to Yavan. Kisalik Rav Chaviva Bar Surmike. So when he, Salik, went up there, Amra Kameit Ahu Rabbanon, he said over this memra in front of one of the Rabbanon, Amrlei, Mandalo Yoda Perushi Krai Motif Tiyufta the Rabbi. Someone who doesn't understand Psukim asked this question of Rabbi. Might see Reyatzon. Zutra Dachohi. It says, what did see Reyatzon? Seer means the younger one. The younger of the Tzon means the younger brother. How do we know which one is the younger brother? The Tani, Rav Yosef, Tiras, Zue Paras. Tiras refers to Paras. And if you go back to the Pasuk that we quoted before, you have Bnei Yefet, Gomer Umagog, Umadai, Viyavan, Vituvao Meshach, Vitiras. So who is the younger brother there? Yavan is the older brother. Tiras, which is Paras, is the younger brother. So obviously the Pasuk in Tzirei Atzon is referring to the younger brother being Paras. And that's how we know that it's the Tzirei Atzon, the younger of the Tzon, the younger of the Tzon is Paras. Amar Rabba Barchan, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Mishom Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Eli, Atida Romish, Yipo, Biad Pras, Kal V'chomer. Now we have another memra. The first one was from Rabbi, obviously in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi in Eretz Yisrael says that Paras will take over for Romi, or Rome will fall to Paras. He bases on the Pasuk. Now we have Rabba Barchan, saying the name Rabbi Yochanan again. That's the Mesora in Eretz Yisrael from Yehuda Bar Eli, that Rome will also fall in the hands of Paras, Kal V'chomer. There's a logical argument. Umam Mikdash Rishon Shibanua B'nei Shem was built by the descendants of Shem, by Shlomo HaMelech, Ve'chirivua Kazdim, and the Babylonians destroyed it. Now, Falu Kazdim B'ad Parasim, and the Babylonians fell to the Persians. Babylonians, Belshazzar, falls to Koresh, the king of Paras. They take over. Paras takes over for Bavel, Mikdash Sheni Shibanua Persim. The second Beit Mikdash was built by the Persians, Bechrivu Romaim. And the Romans destroyed it. Enu Din Shiplu Romaim Biad Persim? Isn't it a Kal V'chomer that the Romans should fall to the Persians? Bavel, who was the destroyer of the first Mikdash, falls to Persia. And then Romans, who are the destroyers of the second Beit Mikdash, destroyed the Mikdash built by the Persians. So certainly, they should fall prey to the Persians later on. And that's the Kal V'chomer that the Persians will wipe away the Romans. Amarav atid pras shitipol biad Romi. Now here you have from Bavel a Mesora, and Rav's Mesora, which is, and eventually pras will fall to Rome. Amarulei Rav Gan of Rav Asi the Rav, Benuye biad sture. How could it be? The builders are going to fall prey to the destroyers? Pras, Persia, who built the second Bayit and was destroyed by the Romans, now they're going to fall to the Romans? Amar lehu, in, yes, gzeret ha-melechi. That's a gzeret of Hashem, that's the way it's gonna be. Iga d'amre, the son that say, Amar lehu, he said to them, inhu nami kasatre. They also were destroyers, because they destroyed the Beit Knishta. They destroyed the shuls and the other places of worship in Persia. And so therefore, they're equally destroyers like the Romans. Tani nami ochi, we have a bright that supports this. Atida pras, shtipo biad romi. In the future, Pras will fall in the hands of Romi. Kado, one reason is, the Satre Bei Kenishta. They destroyed the Batei Knesiot. So that's supportive of the second answer that we had. Ve'od, Gzeret HaMelech Hu Shiplu Bonim Biyad Sutrim. Here's the first answer in the bright as well, which is, to Gzeret HaMelech, that the builders will fall to the destroyers. It probably wasn't so relevant in past history, but today we do see a clash of sorts between Paras and Romi right now. Maybe it has more meaning today. Again, Persia was asleep for many years and we wouldn't have considered it to be a power that would challenge Rome. Now all of a sudden we have the rise again, quote unquote, of the star of Persia, and that might make relevant these Paras and Romi again, these types of battles between them. Dam Rav Yehuda Merav. Ein ben David ba at shitifshot machut Romi arisha bechol yom kula tisha chodeshim. Ben David doesn't come until the Roman, here machut Romi is referring to the Roman Empire, extends over the world for 9 months, that it has complete rule over the world. Obviously, for us, machut Romi is no longer the Roman Empire itself, but the quote-unquote spiritual descendants of the Roman Empire, which would be Western civilization today, or what is known as the West. Shenemar. Lachain itnaim ad et yoleda yalada, yeter echav yishuvun al bnei Yisrael. So lachain itnaim, Hashem will make them, ad et yoleda yalada, until the time that the young one gives birth, I mean the time of gestation, which would be 9 months, yeter echav yishuvun al bnei Yisrael, and then the remnant of the brothers will return to bnei Yisrael. Tanu Banan. Now we're back to our Gemara. Kol avishkot shayuba migdash. All the chambers in Mikdash, Lo Yehuda had mezuzah. None of them had a mezuzah in it. Chutz, Lishkat Parhedrin. Except for the Lishkat Parhedrin, the place where The Kohen Gadol was sequestered going into Yom HaKippurim. She'a ba beit dira the Kohen Gadol, because it was a living space for the Kohen Gadol. For those 7 days, he lived in the Lishkat Barhedrin. He slept there, he ate there, he lived there, and therefore it required a mezuzah. Amar Rav Yehuda, lo kama lishkot ayu mikdash ayu lahen beit dira. The Lishkat Barhedrin is not the only place where the people lived or stayed overnight. Rashi says here, you had the places where the Shomrim were, and they stayed overnight in those places. He could also mention the Beit HaMokad. Beit HaMokad, where the Kohanim slept overnight, getting ready for the Avodah the next morning. So we have locations where people did stay overnight. Lo'ila and Mezuzah. And there was never a Mezuzah on any of these locations. Ella, Lishkat Parhedrin, Gezerah Haita. It was a Gezerah that Lishkat Parhedrin have a Mezuzah on it. Here it's unclear what the Gezerah is. Rashi claims that the Gezerah is referenced later on, which is based on Rabbi Yehuda's Shita later on, which is that it shouldn't look like the Kohen Gadol is incarcerated for those 7 days. It has to make it look like he's in a room that is designed to be lived in. So when you put a mezuzah in it, that indicates that it's a Beit Dirah. It's a room that's designed to be lived in. If you simply stick him into a room that doesn't have mezuzah, it looks like you stuck him in a closet and put him there. So in order to make it seem like they're putting him in a place that is made for a living, it has to have a mezuzah on it. That's what Rashi claims, but that's a gezerah later on. Tosafot takes issue with that explanation because he says the Gemara is not there yet. The Gemara hasn't come to that gezerah yet, so maybe not. Right? We're going to read the Gemara now with the gezerah of Rashi all the way through, and then later on we'll come back and see if we have time to do it like Tosafot. The Gemara says, my time with the Rabbi Yehuda. What is the reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda's position? So Amar Rabba, Kasava Rabbi Yehuda, Ko Bayit Shein Asui Limota Chama V'Limota Gishamim, Eno Bayit. A house that's not built, not just to be a summer house, but to be a winter house. I mean, it's an all-season house, it can be used all year round. Then it's a Bayit. If not, then it's not a Bayit. So if only it's good in the winter, only good in the summer, that's not a house. So that's what you have here in a sense. You have a Lishkat Parhedrin, which is only used once a year for 7 days. It's not a house that's used all year round, it's used a very short period of time. So, Eitvei Abayu, is that really true? Vaktiv says, Biketi Beit HaChoref al Beit HaKayitz. Gonna destroy the Beit HaChoref on top of the Beit HaKayitz. But what do you see here? You see that they're called houses. You have the Beit HaChoref, the winter house, and the Beit HaKayitz is the summer house. Samalei, no, that's not true. There it says Beit HaChoref u Beit HaKayitz, Ikrei, you're right. They are, Choref and Kayitz are modifiers of the word Bayit. Of a bayit stam al oikrei, but they're not just called a bayit. He doesn't just call them a bayit, he calls them and defines them as a beit choref and a beit kayitz. So they have to have a qualifier on them. They're not enough to be called a house, but they're enough to be called the winter house or the summer house. But a house in general, they are not called. Since they're not called a house in general, they're not chayav in mezuzah. Etevei abaye, sukkah tachag bachag. When it comes to the sukkah on sukkis, Rabbi Yehuda mechayev. Rabbi Yehuda says you have to have a mezuzah. Chamim, potrim. Chamim say, no need for a mezuzah on the sukkah. B'tani Allah, and we have on this, Rabbi Yehuda mechayev be'iruv u'b'mezuzah u'b'maser. He considers the sukkah to be such a full-fledged house that, number one, if it's in a chatzer, he's got to join in the Erev Chatzerot, because now he's another house inside of the chatzer, and he's got to join in the Erev Chatzerot. Mezuzah, needs a mezuzah on it because it's considered to be a bayit. Maser, Maser, the din of what's called Riat Pnei Abayit. Riat Pnei Abayit is Mechayev, the produce, in Trumot and Ma'asrot. So bringing it into the sukkah is the equivalent of bringing it into the house, and it has a qualification of Riat Pnei Abayit, and then it's Koveya for Trumot and Ma'asrot. So you see, Rabbi Yehuda here is calling a sukkah, which is also only up for 7 days. It's only a week apart, or 2 weeks apart. It's there for only 7 days, and yet, he wants you to have a mezuzah, Eruv, Maser. It's got a structure that is now chayav in mezuzah. So how could he say the Lishkat Parhedrin, which is clearly a much more sound structure, permanent structure, and he's saying there, no mezuzah. And over here by the sukkah, he's saying yes mezuzah. Now the same is true by Chachamim Potrim. Chachamim say patur here, yet by the Lishkat Parhedrin, they say chayav. Now Abai is focused on the question being on Rabbi Yehuda rather than the Chachamim. Tosfot over here tries to downplay the stira in the Chachamim and say that for the Chachamim they could explain it because there's a difference between the Lishkat Parhedrin and the sukkah. Because he says the shiny sukkah is different, the dirat arayhi. It's really a temporary place because the kaya choliyot yotzei mimena, because he could leave it very easily, he could go on. If he's a mitzdeir, his mitzdeir is patur min hasukkah, you're a dugishamim, rain falls, kahena rabot. There are many excuses that allow a person to leave the sukkah. But Lishkat Parhedrin, she'a b'tocha b'kviyut mechayve. But the Lishkat Parhedrin, where he stayed there for 7 days, there were no excuses, he stayed there for the 7 days, that's much more of a permanent structure. And that's why the Chachamim require a mezuzah by the Lishkat Parhedrin. But by the Sukkah, they do not require a mezuzah, despite the fact that they're both places that you live for 7 days. But there's a difference. In the sequestering of the Kohen Gadol, he really remained there for the 7 days. He didn't leave. Whereas by the Sukkah, there are many reasons or possibilities that would cause you to leave the Sukkah and not stay in the Sukkah. Therefore, it has a much more temporary side to it. And that's how we can distinguish between the positions of the Chachamim in Lishkat Parhedrin versus by Sukkah. And that's why the Gemara only poses the question within the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda, not in the Shita of the Chachamim. Tosfot does ask, why is it that the only place they had a mezuzah was Lishkat Parhedrin? What happened to Lishkat Evan, where they sequestered the Kohen that was going to be Sarefet HaParah? How come that didn't require a mezuzah? So he gives two answers. One answer is that they only, talking about here, Lishkot Shemigdash Shebniyot Bakodesh, that were built in the Kodesh. I mentioned this earlier, Dapim, that Tosfot over here has to balance exactly what was the status of the Lishkat Parhedrin that was built in the Kodesh. How could the Kohen live there? Does it have Kedushat Azara? Does it not have Kedushat Azara? So over here, he mentions that it's Bniyot Bakodesh, that's built in the Kodesh, yet earlier on, Tosfot suggested that it was Bniyot Bachol, that it had a doorway into the Kodesh, but it was built in the Chol area. So that is a problem or steer within Tosafot. He gives another answer, which is that the Parah Aduma was only done once in every how many years? So Lishkat Evan, a Kohen was only sequestered in there once in, let's say, 40 years, 50 years, or even 20 years. Did not happen as frequently as every year that it happened by the Lishkat Parhedrin. And therefore, there was not a necessity to put a mezuzah on the Lishkat Evan versus the Lishkat Parhedrin, which did require because it happened every year. So now, v'chitayma midrabanan, that you're only chayav midrabanan in the sukkah. He says, midrabanan, you're chayav in mezuzah. Midrabanan, you're chayav in trumot masrot. Midrabanan, you're chayav in eruv. Bishlama eruv mezuzah ikalameimar midrabanan. By Erev and Mezuzah, you can say it's Dirabanan. I mean, Erev is an institution Dirabanan and start with. So say that your Chaya Midrabanan is fine. Mezuzah, what's the downside of saying your Chaya Midrabanan and Mezuzah? There's not much bad that can come out of that, saying that it's Mezuzah. Elamaser, Me'ika Lameimar Midrabanan. You want him to consider this to have Maestro, Trumot and Maestro Midrabanan. Dilma Atle Efrushe Min Achiyuv Ala Patur, O Min Apatur Ala Achiyuv. You could generate a serious issue over here, which is, these items are really patur mitrumot masrot midoraita. Now he has tevel. He has items that are tevel midoraita. Items that are now tevel midorabanan based on this gezerah. And he's going to think they're both chayav and trumot masrot. We mafish trum masrot on the bundle together. But that's not the case. He's dealing with some that is chayav midoraita, some that is only chayav midorabanan, patur midoraita. And so you're going to have this confusion of chiyuv and patur. And therefore, there's no way they would institute masrot to midorabanan in this case. Tosfot has the obvious question here, and he says the first line in Tosfot on the page, Tamali, ha ika tuva midoraita lo michayev midorabanan gazrubahen, lo chashinan dilma ata lefrushim in a patur al chayuv. Says we have zerot to rabbanan with regards to trumot and masrot, and nobody ever mentions, oh, we're worried about patur chayav. So Tosfot goes through it one by one. He goes through a lot of zerot, he doesn't get all of them, but he goes through a lot of zerot or takanot by trumot to masrot to show that there is, in each one of them, there's an identifying item that teaches you that it's only midrabanan. For instance, we had yesterday demai. Demai, where you're mafrish midrabanan, because ala rov, we said they are masrim hein. So you're only being mafrish the trumot to masrot, misa fake, which means the dinder abonon. So over there he says, by demai, the key is that we don't take off chumah gdola. Since you don't take off chumah gdola, there's a siman that we're only dealing with an issue drabonon, not an issue de oraita. So on and so forth, he goes through. Oh, buying tzvua from the Nachri. When you buy produce from a Nachri, according to the one who says that a Nachri has the ability to be mafkia, Jewish ownership in Eretz Yisrael. When you buy produce from the Nachri, you're patur from Trumot to Masrot. It's his. But the Rabbanan nevertheless instituted you have to take off Trumot and Masrot when you buy from the Nachri. How do you know that's the Rabbanan? Why are we going to get confused? So he says, "B'tzvuat Nachri leka detoy." That's something that's obvious when you're buying it from the non-Jew. That it's everybody knows that's only a dinder abonan. That's obvious. And he says the same thing about what chutz la'aretz. Chazal were gozer on the lands that were surrounding Eretz Yisrael that they also had to take off trumot and masrot. But those were only trumot and masrot, they're abonan. So again, he says it was obvious that those places were midrabanan because they weren't found in Eretz Yisrael. So in each of these cases, he's trying to go through each of these gerot rabanan to show why it's obvious or why people would know that it's the rabanan and you won't have this confusion. And that's why the Gemara only brings up this issue of confusion here. So the Gemara rejects that explanation. El Amar Abaye, b'shiva de kulei amalo plige de mechayva. Okay, again, we're going with Rashi's girsa here. It says that when it comes to 7 days, nobody argues that you're chayav. Ki pligei b'shar yimot ha-shana. The argument's the remainder of the year. So everybody agrees in Lishkat Parhedrin, when the Kohen Gadol's in there, gotta have a mezuzah on there. As long as he's living in there, it's gotta have a mezuzah. Question is, the remainder of the year, when he's not in there, do you require a mezuzah? Rabbanan Savri Gazrin and Shayimot Hashana Atushiva. The Rabbanan goes there the remainder of the year because of those 7 days. Therefore they say mezuzah all year round. Rabbi Savra lo Gazrinan. Rabbi says we're not guzer that there should be a mezuzah the remainder of the year. So that's the machlok before between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda. Chachamim say yes mezuzah. Rabbi says no mezuzah. He's not talking about the 7 days, he's talking about the remainder of the year. In the remainder of the year, the Chachamim say yes mezuzah. Rabbi Yehuda says, no mezuzah. What are you going to do with the sukkat ha-chag on the chag? Your explanation works well for the lishkat parhedrin. But we had a second machlok between them, which is the sukkat ha-chag b'chag. You had the sukkah on sukkis. Now the sukkah on sukkis, we said there that Rabbi Yehuda says it requires a mezuzah. And the chachamim say it does not require a mezuzah. According to Abaye, as long as you're living in there, everyone agrees it needs a mezuzah. Yet, what's going on with sukkah? The Rabbanan are saying sukkah ha-chag b'chag does not require a mezuzah. So here you see, even during the 7 days that you're living in there, the chachamim do not require a mezuzah. So that can't be the explanation. Elom Rava. Rava says this. B'shayimot ha-shana kuliyam alo pligei d'ptura. Everybody agrees that the rest of the year, no need for a mezuzah. Ki pligei, where they argue at is b'shiva. In the 7 days themselves, do you require mezuzah for those 7 days? Okay. So now, all Rava so far has done is unwound the problem that Abaye created by saying that, oh no, everybody agrees on the 7 days and you have to have a mezuzah. That just doesn't work. So Rava says, no, it's the other way around. Everybody agrees the rest of the year you don't need a mezuzah. Their machloket in each of these cases is on those 7 days. Now you still have a problem, which is that Lishkat Parhedrin, Rabbi Yehuda says, Pator. Chachamim say chayav. Sukkah, Rabbi Yehuda says chayav, and the Chachamim say patur. So you have a problem with their positions being opposite, one by sukkah and one by lishkat parhedrin. On that he says, sukkah time of the chud, velishka time of the chud. They're independent reasons. Yes, they are opposite, but they have independent reasons, and there's a good reason in each of them. Sukkah time of the chud, sukkah has its own reason, which is based on shittat Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah on sukkah. The first Mishnah on sukkah tells us that the shittat of Rabbi Yehuda is, Rabbi Yehuda the Tamei, Damar, sukkah, dirat, keva, ba'inan. That according to Rabbi Yehuda, sukkah is a dirat keva. It's a permanent structure. And when you put up a sukkah, it has to be a structure that is permanent. He's the one who says that you can have a sukkah above 20 amot high. You know, the walls there have to be structurally sound and permanent walls. So on and so forth. Rabbi Yehuda believes that the sukkah is a dirat keva. Since it's a dirat keva, he requires a mezuzah. Umichai bebe mezuzah. On the other hand, Rabbanan and Tamayo Dorme sukkah, dirat, arai, ba'inan. That the sukkah is not a permanent structure. The sukkah must not be a permanent structure. It must be a temporary structure. That's the whole idea of sukkah, is that it's a temporary structure. And if it's a temporary structure, a dirat arai does not require a mezuzah. Only a dirat keva requires a mezuzah. Velishka time alechud. And with regards to the chamber, we have a different reasoning, which is Rabbanan savre dira bal korchash ma dira. That when you are forced to live in a certain place, you're quote-unquote incarcerated there, that is called a living location and will require a mezuzah. So Rabbi Yehuda Savar, dira bal korcha, lo shma dira. That since he's forced to live there, he's sequestered there, he doesn't require a mezuzah. O mi derabbanon hu takinula. We saw before in the Braita, Rabbi Yehuda says that mi derabbanon, there is a mezuzah there. So what is that mezuzah derabbanon? He just says you're patur from mezuzah here because he's quote unquote kept there against his will. He's put in there to be sequestered. So therefore it doesn't require a mezuzah. It's not called a real dira. Because he doesn't want to live there. He has to live there. He doesn't want to live there. But why do we have a mezuzah and lishka perhedrin there? Because that's a din derabbanon. Shalom yomru kohen gadol chavush beit asurim. In order to make it that, it doesn't look like he's incarcerated in a prison cell. So what do? We put on a mezuzah to make it like it's, again, a motel room. It's a hotel. It is a beit dira. It is a proper place to live. And we're putting him in a place that's to live, so they put up a mezuzah. Because they didn't have a mezuzah on there. People think we're just putting him into a closet. So in order to make it look more like it's a location for dira, they put a mezuzah on there, even though it was not chayav in mezuzah. That's the gezeirah derabbanan. That's what Rashi was referencing before. Rashi says before, when Rabbi Yehuda says it was gezeirah, this is the gezeirah that he's referencing to. This is the gezeirah that it shouldn't look like the Kohen Gadol is incarcerated. Man tano l'ha d'tanu rabbanan. Who's the author of this position, which is, All the gates that were there did not have a mezuzah. These are the gates, entrances to the Azara did not have mezuzot on them, because the Mikdash, or the Azara, is not a Beit Dira, so it does not require a mezuzah. Chutz, we have an Ark Yisrael Mishar Nikanor, which is the eastern gate, the entrance to the Azara. The Groh has a girsa of Chutz Mishar Hamayim, with the exception of the water gate, because Shlifnim Mimenu Lishkat Parhedrin. Because inside of it is the Lishkat Parhedrin. Lishkat Parhedrin is the Beit Dira, where the Kohen stays. So if you think that the Lishkat Parhedrin is a Beit Dira, then it has to have a mezuzah on it. The rule of mezuzah is that if you have a Beit Dira that's inside of a house, for instance, and you have a chatzer around it, then the gate to the chatzer also requires a mezuzah, because it leads to a Beit Dira, leads to a place that has living space in it. So it's over here. The gate to the Azara, which leads to Lishkat Parhedrin, requires a mezuzah, because it's leading into a Beit Dira. So the way we have it in our Gemara is it's Shar Nikanor, which is the eastern gate to the Azara, the main gate to the Azara is what has it. The Groh amends it to say that it's Shar Hamayim, because as we saw before, that the Lishkat Parhedrin sits on top of Shar Hamayim. So he says the Kohen Gadol would have entered through Shar Hamayim to get to there. So that's the gate that's allocated for the entrance to Beit Dira. That's why the mezuzah is on Shar HaMayim, according to the Groh. So Leima Rabbanan Hi, Velo Rabbi Yehuda. This sounds like the Rabbanan, not Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda does not believe the Lishkat Parhedrin is a Beit Dira. If it's not a Beit Dira, then it doesn't even require mezuzah. So why would the gate require mezuzah? Chamim would think it's a Beit Dira. The gate also requires a mezuzah. If it's Rabbi Yehuda, he gufa gzeira. The only reason you put a mezuzah on the Lishkat Parhedrin is all of gzeira anyway. It's what? So it shouldn't look like he's in jail. Ananikum and igzor gzeira l'gzeira. So now you can have a double gzeira that you have it on there, and then also in the gateway as well. Afilu teima Rabbi Yehuda. No, we can even say it's Rabbi Yehuda, kula chad gzeira hi. It's all one gzeira. If you're going to make the Lishkat Parhedrin look like a Beit Dira, then what do you have to do? You have to put a mezuzah on the Beit Dira and a mezuzah on the shar. It's all part of the same gzeira. It's not a double gzeira. Now, obviously, it's much easier for the Rabbanan to explain it, because they think literally that it is a Beit Dira. Since they think literally it is a Beit Dira, therefore, it requires a mezuzah. And then the gate that leads into it also will require a mezuzah. And that's what we'll continue with in the Gemara tomorrow, about what does require, which areas and what things do require a mezuzah. Now, there's two things I want to address. One is the issue of Sukkah, and the other one is the Girsa of the Tosafot. Now, with regards to Sukkah, we know that a Sukkah does not require a mezuzah on it. The question is, why? That's because, as the Chachamim say, it's a dirat arai. That it is a temporary location. So if it's a temporary location, it doesn't require mezuzah. That's the position of the Chachamim. The question is, why? Why is it that a dirat arai or a Sukkah does not require mezuzah? I wanted to suggest that living in the sukkah and living in a dirat arai accomplishes the same message that's given to a mezuzah in a dirat keva. What is the point of having a mezuzah in a dirat keva? So it's interesting. The Rambam, in two places, uses the similar lashon. The Rambam in Hilchot Tshuva, it's a very famous Rambam. Rambam in Hilchot Tshuva, when speaking about the shofar, says about the shofar, Afal pi shetiat shofar b'rosh hashanah gzirat hakatuv. Gzirat hakatuv. Doesn't give us any reason. The Torah says, blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Nevertheless, remez yeshpo. There is a hint in the shofar, which is, klomar, uru yushenim mishinatchem v'nirdamim hikitzu mitardamatchem. Wake up, you sleepyheads, those that are in slumber, get up. V'tafsu b'maseichem v'chazru b'tshuva v'zichru b'orachem. Grab hold of your actions. Remember to do tshuva. You gotta do tshuva. Remember your creator. These people who forget all year round the truth, waste their time with trivial pursuits, that won't help them. Look to your souls. If you get your act together. That's what the shofar is. The shofar is a wake-up call to get your act together. It's a very famous Rambam that talks about the shofar being a call, a wake-up call, an alarm to sound that you got to get ready. It's time. You got to do tshuva. You can't keep going the way you're going. You're in a routine, the life routine, which leads you through trivial pursuits, doing things, chasing after things that are meaningless. Shofar wakes you up and says, you got to focus on what's real. You got to focus on what's meaningful. That the Rambam writes in Hilchot Tshuva. Happens to be very interesting. At the end of Hilchot Mezuzah, the last halacha in Hilchot Mezuzah, the Rambam describes Mezuzah as well. And it has a very interesting description. He says, Chayav Adam Nizayer B'Mezuzah, Mipnei Shia Chuvata Kol Tamid. Be careful, Mezuzah, because it's a continuous mitzvah. It's one of those mitzvot that you're doing all the time. You put up a mezuzah on your house, you're accomplishing the mitzvah on a continuous basis. V'chol zman shikanes v'yetzei. Every time he goes in and out of his house, yifga b'yichud Hashem, shmo shel Kodesh Baruch Hu. He'll bump into Hashem. It's there on the door. V'yizkor avato, and he'll remember his love for Hashem. And listen to this line. V'yeor mishnato, and he'll wake up from his sleep. V'shkiyotav behevlei azman, and his following after those trivial pursuits. He uses the same terminology as he uses by shofar to the mezuzah. And you'll come to realize that there's only one thing that is permanent, and that is God. Knowledge of God and God. Umad hu chozer ledato, and right away that helps bring him back to reality. And then he goes in the way of the righteous. See, the Rambam uses the same description for mezuzah as he does by shofar. The shofar is a wake-up call for a person to get out of the routine, the daily routine of life. In time, mezuzah, he says, acts in the same way, functions in the same way, to take a person out of the shigra, the normal flow of life. So what's the problem? The problem is that a person in a normal lifestyle has routine. He has things that he goes after, he works for, he chases after. That's what keeps him busy. And then the shofar wakes up and says, wait a minute, maybe that's not important. There's something else that's important that you got to focus on. The same thing happens with the house. A house is a permanent structure. When you have a permanent structure around you, you come to think that everything stays the same. Everything is permanent. Permanent meaning that my pursuits, everything around me is permanent. What does the mezuzah come to remind you? There's only one thing that's permanent. That's God. Everything else is temporary. But that, you only have that problem when you're living in a permanent structure. When you have a permanent structure, you can come to that mistake and think that there's permanence besides God, or besides the pursuit of God. Therefore, you need a mezuzah to remind you, no. The only thing impermanent is God. On the door frame, it's, by the way, it's on the strongest part of the house. On the structure, that is the one thing that stays standing. When things are destroyed, the one thing that stays standing for many times is the door frame. There's the mezuzah. It's the most permanent part of the house. That's where the mezuzah is to remind you. There is no permanence besides God. But you only come to that mistake when you're inside of a house that has permanent structure. On the other hand, when you're living in a sukkah by definition doesn't lend itself to that problem. Sukkah is a dirat arai. The whole point of being in the sukkah, being in the dirat arai, is to acknowledge that you have no roof above you. Only God sits above you. So the sukkah doesn't lead to that problem. The sukkah itself has the message of mezuzah built into it. By being a dirat arai, you're not going to have the problem of being in a dirat keva and coming to make a mistake. Dirat arai has built into it the message of mezuzah, and that's why dirat arai or sukkah is patur mi mezuzah. That's just an explanation for understanding why only permanent structures require mezuzah. Dirat arai or sukkah, which have the message of the mezuzah built in already, do not require a mezuzah. That's one thing. Tosafot over here is upset at what Rashi did. Rashi amended the Gemara. We have the emendation built in because anytime Rashi changed the girsa, usually that became the girsa of the Gemara. But Tosafot says that many of the older books, older Gemarot, do not have the girsa that we're looking at, but rather have a girsa up above. This is by the Lishkat Behendrim or Ayurama Abayi. There, they don't disagree on the 7 days of the Lishkat Behedrin that Yechayv Mezuzah. Ki Plige. Where do they argue? So we have the Gersan Ar Gemara is B'Sharimot Hashana. The remainder of the year, Rabbanon think Gazrina and Sharimot Hashana at Tushiva. That it's the rest of the year, Kenek the Shiva, and Rabbi Yehuda Savar Lo Gazrina. So Rabbi Yehuda thinks you don't need a mezuzah the rest of the year. The Chachamim do think you have a mezuzah. Tosva brings that Ba'od, B'chol Savarim Yishanim, Shraiti, Garsinim, Behu Ipcha. The Gersan is just the opposite. Rabbanon Savre Lo Gazrina. The Rabbanon say you're not Gozer. The Rabbanon think you only need the mezuzah there for 7 days. Rabbi Yehuda Savar Gazrina. That there is a gzeira, that you keep the mezuzah there all year. And therefore, I think the sugya reads totally differently, because he's now flipped the girsa inside of Abaye. Rabbanon sabre lo gazrina. Rabbanon hold that you're not gozer. Perish the gabe lishka chutz melishka perhedrin. Shabaita dira. Perish shaba haidaraya kozain. Betulo mechaive midaraita. Ogzer Rabbanon late lehu. The Rambanan believe the Lishkat Perhedrin requires a mezuzah according to Abaye because it is a Beit Dira. The Kohen Gadol lives there for the 7 days, so it needs a mezuzah. Outside of that, there's no Tokana or Gezerah Rabbanan to have a mezuzah there the rest of the year. Your Chayiv De'oraita when he lives there. When he's not there, there's no Chiyuv not De'oraita, not De'rabbanan. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda believes Wait a minute. There are many places in the Mikdash where people stayed, not on a permanent basis, and yet they don't have mezuzah. So you're wrong. There's no mezuzah here. Even when they're living in it, there's no need for a mezuzah, because it's only a temporary location, only for 7 days. So what Rabbi Yehuda says, Ela lishka b'edun gezeraita. The whole reason you have mezuzah on there is a gezera that should feel like he's in prison. It looked like a Beit Dira and not a closet. How do you do that? You can only do that if you have the mezuzah there all year round. If you have the mezuzah there just for the 7 days, that doesn't give the feeling that it is a Beit Dira. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, you need the mezuzah there all year round to make it look like a Beit Dira. But it's only by Lishkat Parhedrin, where the Kohen lives there, and we don't want to look at like he's incarcerated. So over there, you need a mezuzah all year round, midrabanan. Both on the 7 days itself, it's midrabanan, as well as the whole year round, it is midrabanan. So everybody should know that it's a dira mi'ayota. The only way you're going to have people know that it's a dira is to have a mezuzah there all year round, and that's how people know that it's a dira. Begabi sukkah nami. Same din by sukkah. The shiva decha kuli amalo pligi dechayav. Everybody agrees in sukkah you're chayav and mezuzah. The rabbanan midoraita. According to rabbanan you're chayav mezuzah for those 7 days. According to Abaye midoraita. The Rabbi Yehuda midrabbanan. It's only a din derabbanan. Why? So he says an interesting term here. He says, so it shouldn't look like you're incarcerated in the sukkah. The same problem. Shouldn't look like you're moving into the sukkah. Now you're locked into the sukkah. Then you put a mezuzah on it to make it look like you're going into a Beit Dira. You're going to a place to live, not into a location that is a prison that you can't get out of. So therefore, Yehuda Gazar, Shalom Yimru, Ayashev Sukkah, Chakavush, Beit Asurim, Hu, V'yesh B'tvar Gnayu, B'zi Mitzvah, Nero Kilo Kodesh Baruch, Matriach Yisrael. It's like as if Hashem is burdening us. And Chov Shem B'Beit Asurim, and he's locking us up in jail. The sukkah needs a mezuzah all year round, again, to make it look like it's a Beit Dira. So it's all a din, dirabonon. That's why Rabbi Yehuda says, by Meiser, by Eruv, he makes it look like a Beit Dira all year round. He gives it all the trappings of a Beit Dira, so that it should feel like a Beit Dira when you go in there. You're going into a Beit Dira, not into a prison. So that's the way that he explains the machloket in Abaye, because he says, otherwise, Abaye never answered the basic question. The basic problem in the Gemara is, we have a stira between Lishkat Parhedrin and Sukkah. According to the way Rashi reads it, we never answered that problem, because that's what Rava asked right away. Rava poses the question, I don't understand. Your whole way that you solve the problem doesn't answer the problem of Sukkah. Sukkah b'chag, b'chag, we don't have an answer. Now, the way that Hilsovet has the explanation, this answers the problem of Sukkah and Lishkat Parhedrin. It solves the problem by saying, Rabbi Yehuda always believes everything's derabbanan and all year round. And the Chachamim believes all deraita, but only for those 7 days. Along comes Rava and says, wait, ha-sukkah chag b'chag ketani. Sounds like on the chag itself, that is where their machloket is. Not that Rabbi Yehuda says it about the remainder of the year, but he says it even by the chag itself. And by the chag itself, he disagrees and says that it's patur mi mizuzah. And then Rava gives the alternative explanation over here, in order to move the Gemara through, in order to explain the Gemara, same as Rashi now, because then he moves on to explain that the Sukkah and the Lishkat Parhedrin have different reasons entirely. There's Rabbi Yehuda Lishitato by Sukkah, and the Chachamim Lishitatam by the Lishkat Parhedrin. So that's why Tosafot reads the Gemara in order to uphold the old Girsaot in the Gemara. But he also does it, if you can see, we read from way down in the Tosafot, Tosafot has numerous questions on Rashi's Pshat, including the one that I just mentioned, which is, otherwise Abaye is not answering the question that was the main question of the Gemara. There's an interesting machlokah between Rav Aaron Lichtenstein and Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. They were discussing this issue of staying in the sukkah. The rule is that a person has to be in the sukkah. Now what happens if a person wants to do things, wants to leave the sukkah, and he wants to go out? So you have a similar question with regards to Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara tells us that you're not supposed to leave Eretz Yisrael unless you have a real reason, a purpose for it. So those purposes can be for business, for shidduch, for learning Torah. There are dispensations to leave Eretz Yisrael. But in general, one may not leave Eretz Yisrael. There, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein argues that leaving to go on a tiyul or leaving for a break is allowed. There shouldn't be anything wrong with that. It shouldn't feel like one is incarcerated in Eretz Yisrael. You live in Eretz Yisrael because of the Kedushat Haaretz. Go out to take a break and to rest for the psychological well-being, or whether it's to see the beauty or the Kriyas Shanav Hashem, whatever it is that you're going for vacation, should not be a problem in terms of leaving Eretz Yisrael. It shouldn't be a begiyah on the Kedushat Haaretz. You live in Eretz Yisrael. You're going out to take a break, and then you come back because you live here. But that break should be okay. He said the same thing by Sukkah. How do you view Sukkah? The requirement to be in the Sukkah. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes that one should spend as much time as possible in the Sukkah, that you should only leave the Sukkah for reasons. You have to have a reason to leave the Sukkah. You can't just leave the Sukkah. Rav Aaron there argues the same point and says, that one should not feel like they are incarcerated in the sukkah. It's basically this terminology that's used here. The sukkah is a Beit Dira. It should be like your house. You're in your house, and then you do things outside of the house. You shouldn't have to come up with a reason to justify why you leave your house. It's the same thing as the sukkah. You leave your house sometimes, you just want to get some air. You want to go outside. That's okay. Same thing by the sukkah. You shouldn't have to have the justification for leaving the sukkah, because you shouldn't feel incarcerated inside of the sukkah. So Rav Aaron looks at the argues. It says, concept like here, like Rabbi Yehuda, that when you live in the sukkah, it shouldn't feel like a prison. You go into the sukkah, you feel like, oh, I gotta be in the sukkah. I'm stuck in the sukkah. I gotta... No, you go to the sukkah, you live in the sukkah. Okay, you need to leave, you need to do things out of the sukkah, you don't have to justify that. You go out, you come back to the sukkah, you come back to your Beit Dira. But the way Rav Shlomo Zalman formulates it is that you have to stay in the sukkah. And you can only leave the sukkah if you have a justification to leave the sukkah. You have to have a real reason, a halachic reason, in a sense, to leave there, to justify leaving the sukkah. And Rav Aaron says he doesn't feel that's right because it feels like you're incarcerated in the sukkah. And that's not the impression that we want to create. Dvarim shebikdusha, like Eretz Yisrael, and like the sukkah, are places that people have come to willingly and should want to stay willingly and not be incarcerated there. So this terminology that is raised by Rabbi Yehuda and that Tosfot really plays on is something that Rav Aaron uses as an argument about how one should approach sukkah and how one should approach living or staying inside of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, we'll stop over here.